Welcome to the Monday, November 14th, 2011 edition of the Sands and its Storm Centers Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and I am today recording from Jacksonville, Florida. On Friday, we got a number of reports that the FBI.gov website was not reachable. First idea, of course, was that the FBI just took over some of the DNS servers for the DNS changer botnet they just took down, and well, yeah, maybe that there is some relationship. And indeed, it was a DNS resolution that failed, according to these reports. Now, it turned out to be less sinister. There was really no attack involved here. What happened was just that the FBI.gov DNS signatures expired. FBI.gov is protected by DNSSEC, which is a good thing, and it's actually one of the requirements for federal agencies based on FISMA. FISMA being the compliance standards that a lot of agencies like the FBI have to observe. However, DNSSEC is not easy to implement, and the FBI sort of hit one of the pitfalls that people commonly experience when they're implementing DNSSEC. DNSSEC signatures will expire after some time. The default is 1 month usually. The FBI picked 3 months for its signature, and whenever the signature expires, you have to resign the zone, which means you have to run the script that takes your private keys and creates new signatures. The keys themselves actually do not expire, it's just the signatures, so theoretically you can just use the same keys over and over to sign the zone. Now, if you happened to go to FBI.gov or you attempted to and you weren't able to, then it's actually a good thing in some ways because it means that your ISP or your DNS server is actually validating DNSSEC signatures. A lot of ISPs don't do it yet because, well, configuration issues are quite common, happened to me with some of the domains I manage from time to time, and as a result, just to keep users happy and keep from complaining about sites being down, a lot of ISPs just don't validate DNSSEC. Comcast, for example, was one of the larger ISPs that had this problem, so to speak, and users of Comcast were not able to visit the FBI.gov site. DNSSEC, in short, is protecting you from spoofed DNS responses. I think DNSSEC and SSL really sort of go together. They sort of back up each other, and as part of sort of a defense in depth infrastructure, you really shouldn't rely on either, but you should use both. While we're talking DNSSEC, there's sort of another configuration issue that does come up from time to time, and that's like your keys are actually validated using a hash of your key that's deposited with your parent zone. So, for example, the FBI.gov key, a hash of it is deposited with the .gov zone. And of course, whenever you update your keys, you also have to update those records. They're usually referred to as DS, Delta Sierra records. I will have a couple links to check DNSSEC in the show notes. And also, if you're checking the respective diaries, you'll find some more details. Well, and then we got a new vulnerability against OS X. In this particular case, the sandboxing used in OS X that, of course, was in the news, I think it was last week, when Apple announced it's going to make sandboxing mandatory for App Store applications. Now, the sandbox, again, is supposed to define what an application is allowed to do. What Core Security found here is that some of the default profiles that Apple makes available to developers do have the ability to limit networking of an application. However, they do not limit Apple events. So as a result, what you can do is you can send an Apple event to another application that does have networking allowed and now can ask that application to actually establish a network connection. Let's say, for example, email contacts from a contact book was one of the examples mentioned here. Now, I don't think that invalidates the entire concept of sandboxing. Of course, whenever you set up a sandbox, you have to keep it as small as possible and be very careful as to what exact privileges you allow inside the sandbox. Apple responded to the particular announcement by Core, mentioning that it will clarify its language when it comes to these profiles to make it more obvious to developers what these profiles are allowed to do and not allowed to do. And finally, an interesting and somewhat weird breach that was finally resolved in court. The former Tour de France winner Floyd Landis and his trainer got convicted of actually being somewhat responsible or involved in a Trojan that was planted in a doping lab's computer. The actual Trojan was planted by a man named Alan Kuros, and he confessed to doing it and extracting documents from the doping lab, but those documents were then handed to Floyd Landis, who was actually convicted also of doping in the Tour de France. So interesting how sports hacking doping all fits together in this case. In 2006, that particular Trojan was installed in one of the lab's computers. Not really clear from the news reports how it got there, and then about 1700 files were downloaded from that computer. Some of them then later showed up in a website created by Floyd's trainer, who set up the website to discredit some of the lab results. Anyway, this is it for today, so thanks again for listening, and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.